Hello and welcome to Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. The London Book Fair took place earlier this month, and this year the event focused on the Baltic states, shining the spotlight on Latvia, Lithuania and Estonia. Each country put forward an author of the day, and on the programme this week you can hear the conversation I had with an Estonian author, a renowned provocative writer and columnist. Originally a theatre and literary critic, he's edited a literary magazine and worked as the head of propaganda for the government. He made his debut as a writer in the 1970s and has now published over 40 titles across a variety of genres. In recent years, he's focused his attention on reporting history and current affairs, and his work is typically personified by his biting irony and hyperbolic wit. Mikk Elmut, welcome to Meet the Writers. Can we begin with you locating Estonia for us, geographically, historically and politically?
Russians claim that the Baltic countries, Estonia and Latvia, they have been part of Russia since primordial times. As we say, we haven't, because before the Northern War and the Uusi Kaupunki Peace Treaty, it was called, we were under Swedish rule, then we were under Germans, and before that we were not independent, but something like that. The political system was called a special order, because we belonged to Russian Empire. We were the Tsar's subjects. The Russians, for everything that they don't like, even now in Estonia or in the world, there is one word, fascist. They have quite forgotten what it means. The blanket term for everything that is nasty and disgusting and alien. Even Estonians sometimes are called fascists. So for history, Estonia was independent between the two world wars, because we slipped into the gap somehow again. The big powers fell out. Americans came to help. President Wilson, with his idealism of small nations. Small nations and independent states, they were not a mistake of history, but they didn't belong to the regular pattern. But it ended with the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact before the Second World War. Again, we were put on ice chamber, I call it. Totalitarianism is always an engine of conservation, and we were almost a part of Europe. We were on the same level, say, like Finland. There might have been small differences in living standard, but culturally and so we were almost equal. Whereas half a century later, when Estonia regained its independence, also accidentally, because I don't see that any normality what happened. Some say that it's logical that, like every man and beast, has the right to be free. It's idealism. It should be the way, but it's not the way the world functions. Russian President Putin calls the biggest geopolitical failure, but we benefited from it. It's no rule that it happened, and even Gorbachev didn't foresee it. He thought we will peacefully somehow be a part of the Federation, Russian Federation. And now if we look where the Finns are and where we are, we have been quarter of a century or more independent, and still we have a very long way to go to catch up. And you see, the point is that many people have losing faith. Is it possible to catch up? Because the rest of the world is not standing on the same place. It's moving ahead. Estonia has made tremendous advancements in every field except wealth. The poverty is widespread, not only among Russian speakers, but among Estonian speakers as well. Estonia's level, this e-state and everything, we are on the forefront, but we are not no better than the Scandinavians. We were like in Stone Age people who are now learning how to do algebra in their heads. It's the contrast that we were so backward and now we are on the forefront.
I want to talk about your own history and particularly your history as a writer, because of course literature must have changed hugely in your lifetime, pre and post Soviet domination. You're now one of Estonia's most respected writers, certainly one of the most prolific, if not the most prolific, 40 books or more that you've written. And I wondered if you always knew that that was what you were going to do.
No, I didn't. I had many other things. before my eyes. I wanted to write. As a small child already, I realized I could peep into people's minds. I knew what they were going to say, and I knew what they were thinking. They themselves didn't realize it, but I understood what they thought. And I was wondering for a long time, how can I make some use of this? Because I was no good for anything. I couldn't carry a tune, I couldn't draw, couldn't dance, do anything. And then one day I realized that that is not maybe the only faculty for fiction writing, but one of the most important ones. And if you possess this, then perhaps you can use it. But I didn't dream becoming a writer. I started as a theater critic. I was a fan of theater 12, 20 years, and I was very successful, more successful than a fiction writer. And at the same time, I started writing parodies. But my sense of irony that is inborn in me, that contributed to it. I always see things from the comical point of view, and so I was a very prolific writer of parodies, but other writers. And then I began working as an editor in a publishing house, and I had to edit those manuscripts, and they were quite rough sometimes and not very good, and I had to improve them because editor at that time, it was not the one who put the commas and corrected spelling. He was almost a co-author, as an editor should be. He helped the writer. And then one day I thought, after having worked a whole year there, that why should I waste my time improving the manuscripts of such quality? Before that, I was thinking that writers bring something more mature to the publishing house, but it seems some of them were expecting. They were, say, put in fine condition by the editor, and then I thought I could do better. It's not invention later, but it was my feeling then. And then I started and I produced my first short stories.
Now, I know that you worked in propaganda. You were a spokesperson for the government.
The reason for this was purely what you may call patriotic duty, or, and partly it was just because of camaraderie. In Estonia, the writers always have been something more than just who produce artifacts, literature, entertainment, or for people reading. They've always been spiritual readers, and they were also partly the standard bearers of national values. And so when the period of transition came, when the window opened to restore some kind of independence, then they were on the forefront of this movement, because we had no professional politicians. They all were corrupted, even if they were decent people in their heart of hearts, because of being in the Communist Party and in the service of Kremlin, and they were not trusted. So the creative intellectuals, they took over, and they were everywhere in government. And the first Estonian president, he was foreign minister at the time, Lennart Meri, very respected personality. He invited me because we were old friends. And so I went to his service, not thinking very much. We trusted each other. We had been traveling so much together. And, well, you have been acquainted with someone 20 years. You trust him. I was not the only one. Half of our ambassadors in Europe and America, and they were my colleagues. They were translators and writers, and they were no professional politicians.
Because writers were kind of rock stars. You were huge celebrities, really, at that time.
Yes, it's unbelievable. It was time before social media and the celebrity cult. But people knew, yes, they recognized you by face. The situation compared to now, when you can self-publicize endlessly. And when I look at this, I can't help but just smiling, because it's so different. And I'm sorry for the young writers, because they don't know what it means when ordinary people like you, because they feel that you are their spokesman. You render explicit what they feel in their soul. And this gratefulness and this feeling to be together, that can't be repeated in any circumstances now, because now everything is different. The status of writer change out of all recognition. Writers are entertainers. Even the best of them, they have to be entertainers and performers. And at that time, it was quite different.
And so I suppose the defining thing that absolutely changed things for writers was the change in the political situation.
Yes, but the thing was a bit more complicated. It was very complicated. There never exists black and white, paradise and hell together. In Estonian case, there were at least two lines or two links or paradigms or whatever you call them. One was the national thing, and the other was the ideological communism. In Estonia, there were called the national communists. They were, of course, in Kremlin's service, or how you call it, but many of them, of course, wanted to be independent. Why not be independent? Why not be leader of independent Estonian communists? So it was complicated. So the censorship, it was not as if everything was taboo. There were certain taboos only. You could write about many things as easily as I can today. I can't boast that I was censored. I've never been censored because maybe I was too wise not to cross this red line. But what was red line? You couldn't do a couple of things. You couldn't challenge the supremacy of Communist Party. It's like a mafia state. It has nothing to do with ideology. The same is in China, by the way. You can do almost everything, but you can't challenge the role of Mr. You know who. The other thing was you couldn't glorify your past, the independence of Estonia. It's anecdotal how editor-in-chiefs were fired because poet had made, they made up the colors of Estonian tricolor. And for that, people were fired. It's just joke. The third, I think it was pornography, but it isn't a beautiful thing anyway. So these were the taboo, no-go subjects about everything you could write. And even in this book that came out recently in English, The Inner Immigrant, three quarters of this is written during the Soviet time. And I'm not ashamed of it because they are everywhere. They were concerned with interpersonal relation. They had the attitudes to cities, townscape and landscape, urban intellectualism versus Russoism and things. So you could write about very many things, but what has changed is how you write. It has to do both with change of society, the impact of internet. That has changed everything. So I can't distinguish always what part of the changes that are now taking place are thanks to Estonian being opened up, the Western world, and all kind of extra liberties, and what is due to this impact of internet and this tweeting and everything. The writing has become very flat and very lean to me. So in a way, our time is not the most best time, perhaps, for writing.
I'd like to talk about your own work, because, as you say, it wasn't unduly affected by the political situation. You've written six memoirs. You've also written a couple of books, or perhaps more, where you have an alter ego. Tell me about Fabian.
I coined the name of my protagonist before I actually came across the Fabian society. But you see, sometimes it is to the point without your knowledge. Such coincidence happened, and when I found out what the Fabianism was about, I was quite pleased because the name, it fitted this hero. He's a moralist, as I am a moralist, and I want to improve, but by degrees and stages, not by revolutions, and that's what Fabianism was about. Memoirs I didn't write during the Soviet time, these I wrote 10 years ago. I wrote them because one has to write memoirs when your memory is still fresh. Otherwise, everything becomes distorted. Memory is a very tricky thing. And I didn't write about myself. It's not an autobiography. I write about what I had experienced in my life and those very interesting people whom life had brought me together. And of course, my family tale was also quite extraordinary.
Tell me.
I'm, of course, an Estonian. My grandfather was a military man, deserving boy of poor parents. He went to military academy in St. Petersburg. He graduated and fought in the First World War. And then when the Estonian Republic was established, then he came back. And then he was an ambassador because he fell out with our leader, supreme military general. And at that time, your adversary was not executed, like in, maybe in Africa he would have been executed, but he was sent in the diplomatic exile. He was sent to United States, and he served 10 years there as a military attaché and consul in general in New York. And my father was with him, a small boy. At the age of 3, he went and came back when he was 12 or something like this. He spent his formative years there. Therefore, English became his first language. He spoke English with a certain accent till the end of his days. I remember very well when he had to pronounce those sounds that of water flows or how birds sing, and he counted numbers by himself always in English. He was a professor of English because he knew English and there was nothing else to do. But the point is that my mother was also a teacher of foreign languages, and my grandmother had been in the States. The grandfather, of course, he was sent to Siberia and killed there in 42. But they somehow stayed in Estonia. But they spoke among themselves. They communicated in English at home. I was not allowed. When I was born, Stalin had just died, and nobody knew what was going to happen. And they were afraid. So at home, it was a schizophrenic situation. I was addressed in English, but I had to answer in Estonian. They were afraid if I were taught to speak English, then perhaps in school rumors would spread. And it's hard to imagine now how afraid people were at the time. And that's why I'm an Estonian writer and not an English writer.
Tell me about your latest book then, this latest one to now be translated into English.
They are about urban intellectuals. The last novel that was translated, it covers time span and half a century in the life of Estonians. It is, to a certain extent, autobiographical, but not in details. It begins in the late 50s or early 60s, childhood, university, and then the creative intellectuals, my favorite set of peoples, among whom I sowed my wild oats for 20 odd years. It was a marvelous time. And then the Restoration. And what I focus on is the expectation of people. They expected to make both of the best worlds, to have independence and all the freedoms, but also the security and the equality. They expected to have the zoo and the jungle at the same time. That's impossible. In zoo, there is security. You get fed miserably, but every day you have little room to move, but still you are kept alive. Whereas in jungle, it's very exciting, but there are dangerous creatures and there is competition. And that is one side of the story. But the second that concerns me most as a writer, the writers were, as I told, they were icons. And they hoped that this celebrity status, it was almost celebrity status, it would continue and even be enforced. But why not? They had led, like Moses, their nation to the promised land. And now they expected, of course, a certain degree of gratitude. But they were forgotten immediately when people saw the flesh pots. Then they took this style. Of course, something has remained. Estonians still are crazy about literature, but relatively. The book numbers, how much book is printed, and how much their books are brought, they are still abnormal. They are twice as high as maybe in Germany and 3-4 times as high as in America. But still, it's not the same. Many intellectuals, writers, artists, they fell somehow let down badly. They became embittered and disappointed. And that's what my novel describes, because I have seen the function of literature always to record history, how things were, and I have never seen this subject treated in this way. People who were icons, they fell not from hero to zero, but something like this. So there is a total change in the paradigm of literature. And the writers who came on, they somehow are absolutely not interested in this period. I understand why. I realize it always, the generations. even if it was resistance in France, the children of the resistance fighters, they were not very much interested in it. And the same for the restoring of independence. The young people, just it's daddy's fight, it's daddy's revolution. They're not interested. That's not our business anymore. So they write about other things. They are more globalized, or they write about gender problems, not even so much national, even national issues, this Russian and Estonians. That doesn't affect them either too much. They write very global literature, I should say, very global. Some, of course, go very far back into history. And there is a streak of Finno-Ugric revivalism, tree-hugging lifestyle, and that's very exotic. That I admire. But it's very different. The writing has changed. I'm surprised that I still hang on. I know why, because I have my irony. It's never in excess in people. It's always in demand. Humor is always in demand. And somehow I have managed to accommodate, because I was exactly on the breaking point. I was 35 when all the change came about. So I led one life, and I was fully conscious. I knew exactly what was what. The grass was not greener. The grass was tainted, but not very green. But it was still grass, and it was not red. I know the grass was not red in Soviet time, as many would like to say. And when the change came, I was still at my senses. I was fresh, and I could see what is what. Living in this time machine, it's an enormous benefit, and I wouldn't change it for anything.
And you've documented it all for us, which is completely wonderful. What are you working on now?
I write essays about everything that goes on in the world, the impact of various things, and how to stop all this, how to stop the conveyor belt, who should do it. That boggles my mind. And I write essays, but there doesn't seem to be much audience for them. So I am now a columnist also. I enjoy being a columnist because it goes straight to the audience. I cut my long essays into pieces and feed them into newspapers because they are edible then. They can't read long texts. And well, that is too long. Then I make them cut them into tweets, and then I tweet them. And anyway, I push my message down their throats.
What is your message?
My message is somehow we have to stop it, because it can't go on endlessly. From where must come this force who says that you can't feed 15 billion people three times meat every day, and every person cannot have a personal Rolls Royce? Everybody can't be a celebrity. But we all understand those shortcomings, aware that there is a pollution. But it goes on. We can't do this by revolution. There is nobody out in space who will come and tell us, you see, we had the same problems and we collapsed. But how could it be done? In the framework of democracy, it's almost impossible. Where is the solution? It's no use to spot on those shortcomings. They're visible already for 20, 30 years. We all know them, but no solution. And that's why the words of Zhou Enlai, you know them, about French Revolution. He didn't mean history. He looked in the future. In 300 years' time, it will be clear which system is more capable of managing this crisis we are moving into. Is it democracy or is it managed democracy? I see, to a certain extent, I don't like those Chinese models so very much, but if it comes to managing those huge problems, they can do it more effectively. Take the solar panels, many aspects. They can do it. It's very nice how they do it. They trample on the rights of the individual. Every individual has two rights: to multiply, to continue himself, and to express himself. But you can't do it forever. If everybody writes a book, who will read? If everybody only begets children, where is the end? You can't tell anybody you don't have the right to have children. It's out of the question. It's a civil right. Nobody can tell you, don't write any book, don't tweet, don't write columns, stop, shut up. In general, you see, there are too many people and too much everything.
You've been listening to Meet the Writers, thanks to the production team of George McDonough and Christy Evans. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud, or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.